Hey, this is Robert from the Scarlet Furies, and you're listening to Tiger Claw Radio. Thanks for tuning in.
こんにちは、タイガークローラジオ。You are listening now, Buck J.
You are listening to Tiger Claw Radio, number one in vintage computer and video game entertainment. And now your host, Critical Failure.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am your host, Critical Failure, and you are indeed listening to Tiger Claw Radio. Today on the show, we got an interview with Robert from the Scarlet Furies, a guy who's also the mastermind behind the music in the Gabriel Knight series, and he's also working on something up and coming. Anyway, I was really excited to talk to this guy, and really incredibly nervous, and he turned out to just be a really warm human being and a great guy. We got about 10 minutes, and it's great stuff, and you could tell I was nervous, because at the very end, we were talking about, he brought up country music, and I wanted to mention Tex Ritter, the country legend who wrote Blood on the Saddle, and he High Noon, the theme from High Noon and stuff like that. And what I actually said was John Ritter, the doofy guy who was from Three's Company and Eight Simple Rules and all that stuff. But so he's just an awesome guy and a great interview. And that's coming up next, along with some other talk about some video games and other stuff right here on Tiger Claw Radio.
Are you looking for a podcast that covers all aspects of gaming? Well, in our show, we cover retro games, new games, gaming news, reviews, discussion, and more, all with an interactive community and a unique sense of humor. Who are we? Well, I'm the Gooch.
And I'm the Douchebag. Get your gaming fix with Gooch and the Douchebag Radio every Tuesday night starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on GNET Radio, the number one online radio station for gaming and entertainment.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Tiger Claw Radio, and I am here with Robert from the Scarlet Furies. What's going on, man?
Hey, how are you?
Doing all right. So why don't we jump right into it? Can you tell us who are you?
You know, it's a daily challenge to know. But I'm probably a few different people. You know, the Scarlet Furies actually, you know, came about as a project for my daughter, Raleigh Holmes. And, you know, I sort of grew up in the L.A. music scene and was a studio musician when I was a young guy, and then got to tour a lot and play with a lot of great guys, and then got into the gaming music after that. And so when my daughter called me and her agent said, hey, you know, we want to do this showcase with you and you need a band, and she didn't have one. So I contacted all my old buddies in L.A. who none of us had really seen each other for like 20 years. And we got together and did a show with her, and that was about a year and a half ago. We've been playing together ever since.
Very cool. Very cool. So it says on your website you guys have been together, the core group. Previously, you got together like in the 70s or something?
Yeah, we were in several bands back in the mid and late 70s and early 80s that were, you know, sort of at the height of rock and roll in those days, you know, the power pop stuff and you know, glam stuff. And, you know, of course, back then we all had shags like down to our, you know, shoulders. Yeah. And wore velvet pants, but yeah, so, you know, it's been fun. And some of the guys, like, you know, Rusty Anderson, who just produced our new album, he and I played in a band called Eulogy, which was sort of a big deal here in California. And, he now, you know, has gone on, he's had a great studio career. And now he's, been Paul McCartney's guitarist for about 8 years. So
very cool.
Yeah. So that's awesome. Fun.
So let's get a little bit of info about the some of your gaming resume stuff. I got a note here from Carl saying you were the man behind the music in the Gabriel Knight games. Is this true?
Yeah, that's true. It's I actually was at Sierra Online, you know, in the very early days of gaming, which was cool because it was like the Wild Wild West. You know, there were no rules, and started as a composer for them and a producer, and hooked up with this person, Jane Jensen, and was actually her producer first and then composer for the series also. And we ended up actually getting married and have been together for about 15 years. But we did all of those games together, and we're really proud of that series. It really, you know, gained a great following and won some great awards. And we're actually just getting ready. We've been working on a game this year that's going to be released this fall called Gray Matter. And it's the first sort of big Jane Jensen game in a long time. So I did the music, and then the Scarlet Furies actually have 3 or 4 songs in that game also.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah, the early days of the Sierra Online. I'm a big fan of that stuff. Specifically, like as far back as like the old Quest games. You know, like
oh yeah, cool
Space
yeah.
Quest. Oh man, I love those games.
Yeah, you know, I remember the first couple of years at Sierra. My gig was to take the soundtracks for a lot like Space Quest and King's Quest and stuff, and you know, transpose them for some of the lower platforms, so you know they'd end up basically a series of beeps and groans.
Yeah,
but it was a lot of fun in those days to be involved on all those
early PC speaker music. Oh
yep.
Man, and when they came out, when you actually had it coming out, it was like, oh, this is awesome.
yeah. I mean, you know, we were happy if something sounded decent on a Sound Blaster back then. You know.
Oh yeah. It's a series of lasers. Okay, so the Scarlet Furies, Dark Clad Company EP, that's what you got posted on the website. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's been fun. You know, the Furies have been like playing like crazy for about a year and a half, just anywhere we can play. But before that, we actually took a year and just sort of woodshed in a garage, just writing and really trying to come up with a specific sound and voice for the band. So my daughter Raleigh and a few of us, she writes most of the lyrics and we write the music. So got together and Rusty Anderson saw us and was like, hey man, you know, this should be a real record produced the right way. And he's got an amazing studio. So he brought us in and we worked for about 6 months on the record. It's getting some great reviews, which is great. It's very sort of and totally different than sort of my gaming career. It's very rootsy. It's all kind of acoustic based with a lot of vocals. There's one of the things that people seem to really like. There's a really interesting cover of Nirvana's Heart-Shaped Box, which is kind of unusual, and that was fun to do.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, just before we close here, I was granted one song to give a sample to the people so they can find out exactly who the Scarlet Furies are and what it is you guys can do. And I got the song here entitled All or Nothing. Can you tell us anything about that track in particular?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting track. We actually, the way we do this tune live is very different. It's kind of an upbeat, almost a bluegrass thing. And we got it in the studio and we were like, you know, let's do something different. Let's kind of go old school country with it and actually bring in a really hot pedal steel player and just kind of go for that, almost like when Bob Dylan did Nashville Skyline. So it's got a cool kind of feel like that, hopefully. And Raleigh does a great job on the vocal.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. We love that stuff here on the show. I play a lot of, anything I can get my hands on. See, the last one we had Louis Armstrong and
cool.
Got some John Ritter coming.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a pleasure, man. Anything else comes down the pipeline? You want to get a little promoting to the 10 different people who listen?
Hey, thanks.
You're always welcome on the show. So, ladies and gentlemen of Tiger Claw Radio, All or Nothing.
Thanks, Alex.
And that's it. We're off the air.
All right.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it, too. And let's...
That was the Scarlet Furies. Before that, the interview with Robert Holmes of the Scarlet Furies. A very awesome and warm individual. So thanks so much, Robert, for coming on the show and for granting us the use of that song for this one occasion. I feel obligated now, though, to play a Tex Ritter song. To make up for my goof of confusing Tex Ritter with John Ritter. So look forward to that later in the show. Okay, so That is the interview. Let's go ahead and do our bulleted list like we normally do. It is actually 9:30 in the morning for me right now. And last night, I was up until 3 in the morning. So I'm a little tired. Okay, let's see. Episode 40, which is this. 40 episodes. Rock and roll. So let's start at the top. Coffee. School starts next week. TCTV will slow down a ton. Who knows what's going to happen here? Yes, Tuesday, or Wednesday? Tuesday is my first day of class. And it's going to be a pretty hardcore semester for me, you know, math and science and information systems management. Classes that are like actual classes, not like art history or something like that. So, you know, and when you're in a situation like that, real life has to come first. Tiger Claw TV is going to slow down a lot. There will be I don't put up videos that often anymore, but there probably won't be a whole lot in the future. I have a few that are in production right now, and they'll probably come out, and that's cool. So just a heads up, this is a time when I'm going to have less time to produce the show, so the podcast will continue, but. This is a time where I really appreciate your letters, you know, writing into the show. It helps me, it expands the mailbag, the old fail bag bit a little bit, and makes it easier for me to put out a show. Also, you know, it's just the support is nice. So you can write into cf@tigerclawtv.com. So moving on, let's get to some of the actual news. I wish to hell I knew where I found this. But there's now a Genesis flash cart available on the market, a flash cartridge. Similar to the one I bought for the Game Boy, which I talk about quite often. I got a Game Boy USB cart. You hook it up to a USB cable, plug it in your computer, load it up with ROMs. You're good to go. Well, now there's one for the Genesis. You're going to have to do some Googling to find it because I don't have a link, unfortunately, anymore. But it's $65, and here's the catch. It's a bare circuit board. It doesn't have a plastic case to make it look like another game or something like that. It's just a bare circuit board, the bare ROM chip that you slide into the Genesis slot, and on the top it has a USB port. So if you love your Genesis or you just want to experiment with some strange ROMs or you know anything like that, $65 Genesis card. Also, in other news. A new version of Stella is out. I do not have it yet, but you can get it. There's a story on AtariAge.com. Stella, if you're not familiar with it, is the emulator for Atari 2600 games. AtariAge.com has got a lot of Atari ROMs that you can download for free legally. So Stella is a great program. I know the last time they did they put out a new version. It was just a monstrous update. They added all kinds of new features, like you could play it in a window, which the previous version you couldn't play it in a window. And that's really important because I have a widescreen monitor, so I had to be able to play it in a window. And they also added TV effects, like you can make it kind of fuzzy like a TV. So I don't know what this new one brings, but you can check it out at AtariAge.com. So I wanted to go back to a place I go to for content, or have previously gone to for content for the podcast. A little website called outofprintarchive.com. If you're not familiar with them, basically it is it's a preservation site where they upload magazines, scans of old game magazines, and they're done with publisher's permission, so they're free to download, and it's totally legal. If you go there, whatever they have to offer, they are allowed to offer. So you don't have to worry about anything shady like that. So I love to see, you know, all the stuff that they have to offer, because I didn't get to have a whole lot of magazines back in the day. Whenever I had cash to burn, it usually went to Nintendo games or something. And their latest magazine, I believe, I don't know the title. It was a publication that I wasn't familiar with, because they have a lot of UK titles. But the main focus, CV, it was, here we go, Here we go. Got it right here. It was computer video games, CVG, computer and video games. And issue number 171, February 1996. And the cover story was the Ultra 64. And I thought this is a great one. There's a guy who hangs out in the GNDB forums I butt heads with every once in a while. Mr. Magic, I think his name is, something like that. Well, he's a young guy and loves the Nintendo 64. And he puts it, we did like a top 10 consoles thing. What are your favorite? And he put the N64 like above the PS1 and the PS2 and stuff. So this is a good one for you, man. I enjoyed it a lot. See, I had some more things I wanted to say about it. But when I actually looked through the magazine, it was like 2 weeks ago or something. I will say this, though. There's an ad for the Ultra 64 within the pages, and it has the Ultra 64 logo, which was actually the, that was what Nintendo was calling it before it came out, before it was the Nintendo 64. So it has that within the ads, but if you look on the cover, it says Nintendo 64. It says it right on the system. So, funny little thing I noticed. Let's see, and this is 1996. Awesome year. I actually looked that up. I looked up 1996 when I was doing a video for RoboPit, because I wanted to figure out what games RoboPit came out opposite, you know? And as it turns out, that was the year Resident Evil premiered with its first game. Tomb Raider came out. The Nintendo 64 actually came out that year. And a bunch of other stuff. So Quake also came out that year. So if you're interested in Nintendo 64, if that's one of your favorites, check out Out of Print Archive for the February 1996 edition of Computer and Video Games. So let's talk about the Nintendo 64 versus the PlayStation, because this has seemed to come up. It seemed to come up in forums a lot here in the last couple weeks, and hearing those words together, you probably already have a pretty strong opinion, whether it's one way or the other, Nintendo 64 versus the PlayStation. Personally, I side with the PlayStation, but it is my belief I have always been a software person, not a hardware person. I think what makes the systems good or bad is merely whether or not the games are fun. So, I give you an example of how this thinking can change things. A lot of people knock on the Virtual Boy. If the Virtual Boy had a better software library, I would really be a huge fan of it. When I decided that I didn't like that system, it wasn't because of the normal complaints of the red or the fact that it uses a million batteries or whatever. I stopped liking that system when I realized that they ended it with only 15 games. So that's what I mean by software-oriented and not hardware-oriented. That said, comparing the Nintendo 64 to the PlayStation for me is simply a matter of matching up the games which I really enjoy for each system. And I was drawing up parallels of the great games for the 64. Like, I wanted to make a case for the 64 and really look at this objectively. So I looked at some of the good games and tried to come up with counterparts for the PlayStation. And this is what I came up with. Nintendo 64 has got the Quake series that has Quake 1 and Quake 2, and they're both great ports. Quake 1 is one of my all-time favorite games. And the 64 port is probably the best console version of Quake available. And my only complaint is that it only has two-player deathmatch and not four-player. But they fixed that in Quake 2. Nintendo 64 also has Quake 2, and they have four-player deathmatch. You know, this was all prior to Halo, and I preferred that over GoldenEye. So what did they have? Hold on a second. Oh boy, yeah, high class material. So if you're a PlayStation owner, you probably had to go with a multi-tap to do four player on anything, but there were some four-player games. For example, the PSX also had a version of Quake 2. Didn't control as well, but it was four players, and I did play that, and it was good. It was very playable, very much playable. But they also had Disruptor, and the 64 didn't have that. That was a great single-player first-person shooter, and Blast Chamber, which wasn't... It was not at all a first-person shooter, but it was four players, and it was a brilliant game, which I'm going to talk more about that game in a minute, but let's do more of the comparison. One of the great 64 titles, for me, one of my all-time favorite Nintendo 64 games, right up there with Quake and Mario 64, is a game called Jet Force Gemini. Jet Force Gemini is a third-person shooter. It's a chase camera shooter, and it has... It's, you know, like I've said before, it's mid-90s graphics, mid-90s 3D graphics, which I really enjoy. But it's very kind of cartoon action-y, and it has a four-player deathmatch, which is just the awesomest console multiplayer experience prior to the Xbox. So that is just a freaking amazing game. But the PSX has the Tomb Raider series. You know, so... chase camera, mid-90s 3D. In that department, I'd say Tomb Raider wins. Jet Force Gemini way wins in four-player, in multiplayer. Because, I mean, you know, Tomb Raider is not multiplayer at all. But. And then we have the Zelda games. Nintendo 64's got the Zelda games. But on the flip side of that, the PlayStation has Metal Gear Solid, and we're talking one of the greatest, you know, software entertainment packages ever. And then we have Mario 64 is on the Nintendo 64, which is, you know, Hall of Fame game. And then on the flip side of that, we have Crash Bandicoot on the PSX. Yes, Nintendo 60 or Mario 64 is better than Crash Bandicoot. But there was like what, four Crash games? And speaking of Crash, let's talk about Mario Kart for the 64. That's another good one that sells games. You got Crash Team Racing on the PSX. GoldenEye is another one that comes up a lot. GoldenEye is probably the big system seller. If you buy a 64 today, it's probably to buy Mario 64 or GoldenEye, or perhaps, or maybe Jet Force Gemini. I don't know. So, this is one I want to talk about, Blast Chamber. Because Blast Chamber, I think, is the best four-player party game for the PlayStation. And I think it's worth mentioning whenever GoldenEye comes up, because a lot of people in the heyday would hook up their 64s and have, you know, all-night parties. I remember hearing that quite a lot, all-night parties of GoldenEye. Blast Chamber was a game in which you saw a cube. Your TV screen showed a cube. And it looked a lot like a diorama, and you could see inside of it. It was quasi-3D. It was 3D with sprites, we'll say. And the way it worked was you would walk around on the floor of the cube, and on the walls there were arrows, and if you walked to one of the arrows, the gravity would change. The cube would roll over. And everybody was playing at once. All four people were playing at once. And if you rolled the cube and stepped onto the wall, all the other people felt gravity and fell to the floor. Okay, there was that, and each player had a different color, and then each panel had a receptacle that matched the color. In the cube, there was a crystal. Just a shiny sprite. And everybody had to fight to get that crystal and get it to their receptacle. So each player had a bomb strapped to their chest, and it would tick down. And when you had the crystal, your clock would stop. And when you put it in your receptacle, the time would increase, so you would live longer. And you could reduce other people's time by putting it in their colored receptacle. And it was just the chaos, the beautiful, beautiful video game chaos in this program. It was something for the ages. It was a brilliant, brilliant game. it was so bizarre and so, you know, beautiful. It was a beautiful game. And not just the chaos there, there was also a puzzle mode, which, you know, puzzles using gravity controls, you know, alterable physics. Oh man, I love that game. And it is not as technologically advanced as GoldenEye is, but gameplay, it just blows GoldenEye out of the freaking water. And that may be blasphemy to some of you 64 fans, and I understand that. But I have to call it as I see it, and that's just the way I feel. Blast Chamber, it's a great game. And it's not like it's a super rare game either. You know, it's not super recognized or popular at all. So, I mean, you can get yourself a copy of Blast Chamber for, like, $6 or $7 off of eBay. And the only reason why I haven't is because the game, I think, suffers when you play by yourself. So, I rarely get that many people together to play games. And when I do, it's probably to play Super Smash Bros. These days. So, I would check that game out if you've never played it. Blast Chamber. There's another game for the PSX, the final game to make my case before I move on to my next segment. It's a little game called Trap Gunner. And Trap Gunner is easily the most underrated game, I think, ever, for me. Because you go back to like the Nintendo era, the NES era, and people are digging up these old games that got swept under the rug. But not so much with the PlayStation era and the Nintendo 64 era. There are a lot of games that were swept under the rug then that are staying under the rug because it's not quite cool enough to dig them out yet. So Trap Gunner was, to put it in one sentence, not giving it a lengthy description like Blast Chamber, Trap Gunner was the, think of it like the PlayStation version of Spy vs. Spy. Trap Gunner was a top-down game where you had a gun, and you were let loose in an arena, and you could set up more, you know, the long and short of it, you could set up traps, and for the other person to, you know, fall into or blow themselves up in. Excuse me. Yeah, you'll have to excuse me. I'm really exhausted, which is why I'm, you know, kind of disgusting right now. So I think that wraps up my PSX versus Nintendo 64 roundup. They are systems designed for entertainment. Whatever side you take is not the wrong side. You pick what you like, and that's what it is. I picked the PSX, but got much respect for Nintendo 64 fans, because the Zelda games, Jet Force Gemini, Mario 64, you know, GoldenEye, Quake, all great games, all in the 64. So, that's that. Moving right along now, I got 4 items left on my list, and we're only 35 minutes in, so we're moving right along. Actually, let me wrap this up, because I have an old-fashioned fail bag this time. Enter number 4 is also out on the Out of Print Archive, and I've mentioned this before, but I was going to flip through it on the air, and I haven't got the chance to yet. I actually read it. I read the magazine. Enter Magazine is a magazine which it's a games magazine. It's the world of computers and electronic games from 1983. The first 3 are up on the outofprintarchive.com, outofprintarchive.com, and they're from 83, and number 4 is from February 1984. I'm a big fan of the Atari. I have experienced a lot of Atari for the very first time in the last year. So I've been eating this series up, and like whenever Out of Print Archive puts up another Enter magazine, to me it's like, yes! Freaking Enter! And this one was particularly good. I think issue 3 didn't have a lot of stuff for me to read on the air, but this has some stuff that I have wanted to share with you, particularly the letters section. These are some of the most basic like questions that are answered, I think, rather well, which is really entertaining to me. For example, the first letter, I think, in their Q&A section here is, what are sprites? That's the question. That's the whole letter. And Enter writes back, a sprite is a computer drawing of a shape that can be moved around on the screen in one place. It can be an alien or a spaceship, or a character in a game. Sprites are used in many computers, including the Commodore 64 and the Atari 800, though Atari calls them player missile graphics. Without the use of sprites, anything drawn on the computer screen would have to be redrawn line by line every time you wanted it to move. In the Commodore system, which is typical, you can call up a sprite design program which displays a grid of a 24 by 21 dot on your screen. You can, quote-unquote, paint your sprite with a choice of four colors. By assembling the proper combination of dots, you can make a recognizable shape. Note, you can practice drawing on a sprite on graph paper by coloring in certain blocks. In fact, this is how most programmers create their sprites. See Pixel Perfect on page 24, and you'll understand what we mean. Once a sprite has been defined, the computer remembers its shape and can move it around on the screen block by block. And then it goes on for another couple of paragraphs. That's cool, man. I like that. That's like 1984 computer intrigue. And there's only one more that I wanted to read from their letters column in that vein. And here it is. Dear Enter, who invented computers? Which I think is a fantastic question for a 1984 computer magazine. And Enter writes, for centuries, people have been building machines that calculate. However, the modern computer that computes very swiftly using electronics was only invented a few decades ago. Credit for inventing the modern computer generally goes to Dr. John McCulley and Dr. J. Presper Eckert. These two scientists built ENIAC, Electronic Numerical Integrator and Computer, just after World War II. The ENIAC project cost $500,000 and it was financed by the military, which used the computer to design the hydrogen bomb and to calculate missile trajectories. However, McCulley and Eckert weren't really the first electronic computer builders. During the 1930s, Dr. John Attensoft of Iowa State University built a machine for $1,000 that he claims was the world's first computer. Dr. Attensoft's machine was an array of vacuum tubes that were wired together, and it was limited in scope compared to ENIAC, but Dr. Attensoft's machine could perform large computations within seconds. There were important connections between the two computers. First, Dr. McCulley visited Dr. Attensoft and saw his machine in operation before ENIAC was built. Second, McCulley later wrote Attensoft asking, is there any objection to my building some sort of computer which incorporates some of the features of your machine? It seems credit should go to all three men for their contributions to computer science, but the battle among computer scholars about whose machine was really the first is still going on. Awesome letter. Awesome, awesome letter. So that's great stuff. Let me see in my notes if there's anything else in this issue of Enter that I wanted to look at, because I took down some page numbers. What is a sprite? Who invented computers? And the pinball construction set on page 10. When I was a kid, we used to play my dad's IBM 386, and my favorite games were the games which let you design levels and stuff. Anything that had a level editor, I loved it, man. That was it. And my dad had a lot of floppy disks that came in like album covers, like vinyl record album covers. And by the time we got a hold of them, us kids, they were already outdated. But that didn't matter to us, you know, because we were kids. Kids have no sense of what is uncool. They just whatever they like, pure and simple, which is awesome. One of my favorite games was the pinball construction set, and it was I think it originally came out for the Commodore 64. Well, we loved that thing, man, and it was one of my first video reviews. It was among my first video reviews was the pinball construction set. So you can check it out on YouTube. Got a video up there for it. Check out the video index in tigerclawtv.com. That'll point you that way. There's also a pack of pinball construction set tables that I've built, and that's freeware. You can download that and play it on DOSBox. DOSBox.com, that'll let you play that. So let's see. How are we doing on time? Good. So I'm going to go ahead and read this. I love creating my own pinball games more so than playing them, Phil. On the other hand, this disc lets you make some, very good games. Pinball Construction Set is just what it sounds like, a box of things for building your own unique games of computer pinball. On the screen, you see an empty pinball table on one side, all the trappings of pinball games. Bumpers, flippers, kickers, chutes, lights, dropout, targets, etc. The amazingly powerful program works very well. Your joystick moves on the screen, it moves the on-screen hand to the object you want, press the button, and allows you to drop the object anywhere on the table. Nothing could be simpler to operate. PCS comes with four demonstration games built in. The best way to start playing with PCS is by changing one of the four games. Add some targets, take away a flipper, increase the points. Initially, most people get wrapped up in building a game so full of targets and flippers, there's no way to lose. It can take a while to get serious about game design, but everything works so logically and so well, the program. So when you get serious, you can explore every imaginable aspect of pinball. Don't be surprised to find that at least half the fun lies in the act of creation itself. Pinball Construction Set came out for Atari, Apple, and Commodore. Electronic Arts, it's a disc game for $40. Okay, now let me just say that back in the day, I would absolutely pay $40 for this game. This game was created by a guy named Bill Budge, and he was actually honored. They inducted this game into the Video Game Hall of Fame or something. They gave it some incredible honor. In 2008, they did this. And since this program came out, there's still no definitive program to build a pinball table with on the computer. I have played with a program called Visual Pinball, which was an attempt to make an updated version of the Pinball Construction Set. Nice 3D thing. You draw a 2D table, much like described here, and when you hit play, it renders it in 3D, but it's not nearly as user-friendly, and I just didn't enjoy it as much. But this is one of the oldest games I can think of, which is just still incredible today. So that's great. A couple other games they have here, they have something called Maze Construction Set. Not familiar with that one. See, these are all build-it-yourself games. Load Runner is mentioned here because you can make your own tables. Let's see. And a couple other games I'm not familiar with. Crossfire from Sierra Online. Way Out from Sirius. Necromancer from Synapse. And then I just think it starts talking about regular games. Wizardry, there's a Wizardry thing. Man, I love the... Love the video game reviews in these old magazines. It is an incredible, incredible piece of history which is open to us for free. And that is awesome. And that's it. I think the main focus of this issue is about graphic design, which is interesting because graphic design has changed a lot since 1984. So that's that. So you can check that out on outofprintarchive.com. I believe it's still on the main page, but it came out like a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago. So you're gonna have to scroll down a little bit. That's Inner Four. Jeez, I talked about that, I think, for longer than I wanted to. 3 things left on my bulleted list. Finally broke down and bought a Wonder Swan. Paid $15 for it. I got a skeleton blue model. It hasn't shown up in the mail yet. GameFAQs.com. The Wonder Swan board is empty. So I started a Wonder Swan topic. Yay! I'll let you guys know how that pans out. See, looks like the next item on the list looks like I'll be on the next Gooch in the Douchebag with Jerry Terrifying. Yeah, Gooch is getting his wisdom teeth out, so good luck with that, Gooch, and we're hoping for the best, so DB is on his own, and he's invited Jerry Terrifying and myself to come fill in for Gooch. So we're going to have a good time. Make sure you check that out. I think, from what I understand, Wednesday is going to be recording day. I don't know how long it takes them to put one out after it's recorded. Just keep your eyes open for that, goochinthedouchebag.com. They spell douchebag funny. It's D-O-O-S-H-E-B-A-G. But you don't have to worry about that because there's a link that'll shoot you right over there on tigerclawtv.com. You look on the right side, there's a couple links. Also, other podcasts I've been on. I was actually just recently on Mondo Coolcast 13. It was broadcasted, the tape that we made was broadcasted live this past Saturday, which was a lot of fun. And that was, it's a long podcast. We did a half hour of me solo, then Jerry and I talked for a couple, for like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, and then I did a letters segment at the end. That, at least the interview, was a really, really good bit of radio. So you can check that out on MondoCoolcast.com. There's also a link to that site on TigerClawTV.com. I'll shoot you right over. See, so what are we looking at? 30 minutes? 30 minutes. Rock and roll. So now it's time for one of my favorite parts of the show. We're going to do the fail bag here in a second, but why don't we go ahead and take a break. This, ladies and gentlemen, this is Tex Ritter. Not John Ritter, this is Tex Ritter. I don't know if there's a relation or not, but this is the theme song to a Gary Cooper movie called High Noon. And everybody knows High Noon. So if you haven't seen High Noon, it's an amazing movie, and you got to watch it. It's a Western. Great stuff, great stuff. This is the theme song to High Noon from Tex Ritter.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling. On this our wedding day, do not forsake me, oh my darling. Wait long. I do not know what fate awaits me. I only know I must be brave, and I must face a man who hates me. A liar, coward, a craven coward, a liar, coward in my grave. Oh, to be torn twixt love and duty, supposing I lose my fair-haired beauty. Look at that big hand move along near in High Noon. He made a vow while in state's prison, vowed it would be my life or his. And I'm not afraid of death, but oh, what will I do if you leave me? Do not forsake me, oh my darling. You made that promise as a bride. Do not forsake me, oh my darling. Although you're grieving, don't think of leaving. Now that I need you by my side, wait long, wait long, wait long, wait long.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know what time it is.
It's time for the fail bag.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for that staple of entertainment we call the fail bag right here on Tiger Color Radio. Let me explain how this works. This is the letter segment. It's the letters. We used to use this segment to read letters that were actually message posts from other forums. So they weren't real letters, but things I would actually read as letters because nobody was writing in. Now, if you want to be on the fail bag segment, you can send all your letters and audio comments. Yes, we take audio comments. You can get up and do some soapboxing on the mic, like what warm-blooded American or person in the world does not like to soapbox a little bit. So you can send those into cf@tigerclawtv.com. Let's get on with the letters. Now, the first one is from Jerry Terrifying. I believe it's from Jerry Terrifying. He writes in, I was wondering, do you have a Dreamcast? You might be interested in the Dreamcast version of Dino Crisis. There's a ton of games that are on the PS1 and Dreamcast that are basically just the same game, just a little prettier on the Dreamcast. I don't have one of those. I would love to have one. I used to room with a guy who had one, so I bought a couple of games, and as it turns out, he still has them in his closet. Hidden and Dangerous, Choo Choo Rocket, Quake 3. I think the Dreamcast keyboard also he has supposedly in his closet somewhere. So I would love, love, love to get a Dreamcast, and I would go back and get those games, and I would already have some. Ho-ho! One of the great things about the Dreamcast, I think, was the VMU unit. I think that was a brilliant, brilliant piece of technology, and I can't believe it was never used again. The idea of memory saves, games coming with tiny little games that you could play on the memory card, even though they weren't, you know, great to play, I guess. It was just a wonderful idea and a great innovation. It was a great system, Dreamcast. I wish that I had the chance to get more experience with it. But every little bit of the Dreamcast that I got to sample that I thought was awesome. But that's Sega, you know, that's the way Sega is. So no, I don't have one. I haven't played a whole lot of Dino Crisis. Dino Crisis, he's talking about, he writes this in, was one of the last games that I bought and talked about. It was a PS1 game I bought based off of a stock photo from eBay. Came out okay, game came out working. I didn't get to play it a whole lot, and I'm getting ready to start school, so I imagine I won't be able to play it a whole lot. But yeah, I have my eyes open for a Dreamcast deal. But you know, I don't know when that's going to happen. You know how these things go. Okay, so the next letter is from Sendu, and he writes in, questions, just for fun. Questions, can they run? Have you ever bought something from eBay just because it was cheap? Do you still support GameGabble? Weren't you going to start reading messages from your forums during the fail bag? Okay, so let's take these questions one by one. Have you ever bought something from eBay just because it's cheap? Yes, and I got a great story for that. But I'll do that after the other two questions. Do you still support GameGabble? Meh, I guess. GameGabble can be a great site, but it doesn't have the listings and it doesn't have the users that eBay does. You're more likely to find awesome deals on eBay, but I want GameGabble to be a success. So my recommendation is, if you're looking for games, check GameGabble first and then go to eBay, but eBay is ultimately where you're going to find your deals. Yes, I still support GameGabble, but not as hardcore. I still haven't bought anything from them yet. So, I mean, I kind of stopped talking them up until I've had an experience with them, because I don't want to be a phony. You know what I mean? All right, so that's GameGabble. And weren't you going to start reading messages from your forums during the failbag? Yes, I was. I don't know why I haven't done that yet. I don't have any messages from the forums here in the setup for the failbag this time either. I just haven't done that yet. I don't know why. So write in to CF at TigerClawTV.com. You'll get on the failbag. Now let's go back to this first question. Have you ever bought something from eBay just because it was cheap? So let's talk about that. My mother had a mental illness. Doctors describe as paranoid schizophrenia. So she's done a lot of less than normal things. And one of the things she did, I believe I was 16 years old. It was after my old man passed away. She decided she was getting these checks from somewhere. I don't know where she decided. The long and short of the story was, let's give $1,700 to a teenager. Don't know why she did it. I have no idea. But that was the awesomest, like, month, I think, ever. I bought a sword. I bought a sword. And I bought, like, a PA system for the crappy band I was in at the time. And so I bought all kinds of weird stuff then. Yeah, so when you have a bunch of money in your pocket, I think it's easier to fall into that trap. So, yes, I have bought something off of eBay just because it was cheap. I wish I could remember all the stuff I bought during that time. I was smart enough to buy a video camera, which stayed with me all the way up until I met my wife, until it finally broke. I think it broke, really sadly, during a Disney World trip. The first time I had ever been to Disney World, when I was old enough to remember, I filmed some stuff with that camera and it ended up breaking, which is really sad. Another really cool story that is, I took that camera to a car show, and I met Mick Foley with it. Mick Foley, the wrestler, Mankind, you know. He was doing a signing, and I had that camera. And Angie, good friend of mine, we've been friends since we were little kids. You know, big wrestling fan at the time, because this was when I was, you know, 18, 17. I don't know. So I said he wasn't there, you know, because I went with my family. And I actually opened up the camera and I said, you know, my friend is a big fan of yours, but he couldn't make it. Can I get you to say hi to him? And sure enough, Mick Foley, you know, the champ that he is, was like, hey, you know, sorry you couldn't be here. Have a nice day. It was like 2 seconds of footage. But he said hey to my friend on the camera. So I had this footage of Mick Foley, the world-famous wrestling legend, on my camera saying something to my friend, and the camera broke. I still have that tape. I have no way to watch it, but that 8mm tape will be in my possession forever. And I wish I had it. I'd love to put it online, although he uses my friend's real name, and he doesn't like that. So that will probably never be online, unfortunately. So that's my story of having money. So let's go ahead and do the fail bag before we run out of time, because I think we only got a few minutes left. I'm going to go through this rapid fire. I had expected this to take up a bunch of time. I thought I was going to like finish with my show 15 minutes early, so I wanted to blow it up a little bit. Okay, so here we go. If you're not familiar with the fail bag, what it is I read letters from message forms as if they were written into the show. I did this when I was first starting the podcast because nobody was writing in, but I still wanted a letters segment, and it's just something that has stuck. So these are from GameFAQs.com. I have a little soundbite that explains that, but I don't feel like digging it up and put it in the show because I'm going to be hanging out with a friend in like 10 minutes. I'm going to be out of here, so I want to get this thing done. Vectorman writes, if you could just have one more game professionally developed for the Genesis, what would it be? I prefer personally like to see a sequel to Comic Zone or maybe Mega Turrican 2. My answer is this, Phantasy Star 5. Yes. Also, one of the things I loved about Genesis was the mid-card games, the quirky, this is the way Jerry Terrifying tells it, the quirky games that were innovative but, not like anything else. So any mid-card type game. Also, personally, and I think I'm on my own like this, wouldn't mind seeing another Genesis Strike game, like Jungle Strike or Desert Strike. I know there was three. I could have used a fourth one. And in the topic that I got this question from, somebody said Goonies 3. You remember Goonies 2 for the NES, and there was a Goonies 1 that never came out in the States? Goonies 3, that's an awesome idea. Konami could have put the franchise on the Genesis, and it would have been a great game, because I love Goonies 2, and the Genesis would have been, the hardware would have made that game shine just brilliantly. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. King Metal Slime writes in, what was your first Game Boy game? Just curious. For me, I was really young at the time, and I still vaguely remember my dad buying a Game Boy for me and my brother. It was black, and the first game we got was Kirby's Dream Land 2. Awesome game to start with for the Game Boy, in my opinion. Still one of my favorites. Thanks for writing into the show, King Metal Slime. My answer to that is Mario Land 2. My older brother Paul I just used his real name. Sorry, Paul. he had a Game Boy when I was a kid, and I had a bucket of Tiger Electronic games. And his first game was Super Mario Land 2. He let me play occasionally, so that's the one I usually credit with being the first Game Boy game. I didn't own it, but it was the first one in the house. I think my first Game Boy game was Double Dragon, which I stole from somebody at school, and I didn't even have a Game Boy. So I think that was the first one that I owned. So it's either Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins, or Double Dragon. Next question. KillingJoke666 writes in, who keeps the PlayStation hooked up just so they can see the whole boot screen when they play a PS game? Best boot ever. And my answer is,
no one.
Yeah, the PlayStation boot screen is cool. I agree with you there, but I liked it that the PS2 makes it load a little faster. I don't have to see that every time I load a game up. You know what I mean? Not a big deal, but I like the fact that it goes faster on a PS2. Let's see. And that's it. That's it. That's the show. That's the show. So I think we're going to wrap it up. Ladies and gentlemen, here's our final song, and then we're going to wrap things up right here on Tiger Claw Radio.
Yes, no, maybe. I don't know. Can you repeat the question? You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now. And you're not so big. Life is unfair, so I just stare at the stain on the wall where
the TV bin. But ever since we've moved in, it's been empty. Why I'm in this room, there is no point explaining. You're not the boss of me now, and you're not so big. You're not the boss of me now, you're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now, and you're not so big. Life is a test, but I confess mess I've made so far. Great on a curve, and you'll observe I'm right below the horizon. Yes, no, maybe I don't know. Can you repeat the question? You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now, and you're not.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know what that sound is. It is time to wrap up the show. All or Nothing is a property of the Scarlet Furies and is used with permission. Unauthorized reproduction of that song will result in the Boogeyman jumping out of the closet and beating you with a crowbar. I would like to give a special thanks to Robert Holmes for coming on the show. Thanks so much, man. Big props to Trivers, Carl from Scenic 7 PR. You are awesome, Carl. I always get a little nervous when he calls because I have no idea what kind of crazy crap he's going to come up with next. But it's an awesome human being. Check out Scenic 7 PR. Tiger Claw Radio is, in fact, brought to you by Scenic 7 PR and GNet Radio. Check out GNet Radio on mygnetradio.com. If you're listening to this on an MP3, thanks for checking us out. And if you happen to be listening to this live, stay tuned for Retro Kaiser, or for Sunday Night Kaiser, everybody. I'm Critical Failure for Tiger Claw Radio signing out. Goodbye!
Furies, I can't get it.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times we've been called the Scarlet Furries. It's a problem.